This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey everyone, heads up, this episode deals with sexual harassment and abuse.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
Amory, Ben.
Dean Russell.
Dean.
Happy SCOTUS season.
To all who celebrate.
Oh, that's right.
This is the story of what happens when 9 people between the ages of 50 and 74 decide the fate of the internet.
Oh, no.
Perfect.
So in February, I heard about this one case at the Supreme Court.
Your argument this morning in case 21-1333, Gonzalez versus Google. Mr. Schnapper?
Gonzalez versus Google.
GVG.
So back in 2015, Paris saw a string of terror attacks. ISIS killed 130 people, including 23-year-old college student Noemi Gonzalez.
The plaintiffs suffered a terrible fate, and their argument is it's because people were radicalized by ISIS.
The Gonzalez family claimed that Google's subsidiary, YouTube, used its algorithm that promoted ISIS recruitment videos. It was hosting and disseminating terrorist agitprop. In other words, Google aided and abetted the murder of Noemi Gonzalez.
Wow.
But there's this one law that protects companies like Google from these sorts of claims. It's a big part of our story today. The law is called Section 230.
Oh, Section 230. It's
this
like...
It offers some sort of protection for websites, I'm guessing.
But it's also like a this like oddly shaped political football where I feel like Trump has talked about it in ways that don't make sense. Senator Josh Hawley has talked a lot about it. And then like I feel like on the Democratic end, people have also talked about it, but none of them really know what it is.
Yeah, so maybe flesh it out for us, Dean.
It's complicated, but its essence, sort of, we can talk about that. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act says that websites and platforms like Facebook, Google, Twitter, none of them can be held liable for illegal content posted online by their users.
Aha.
This is big tech's like get out of jail free card. Like it protects them from being sued for hosting drug sales and arms trade and like racist ads and terrorism and basically you name it. They can be shamed, but they cannot be sued. But here's the thing. The Supreme Court decided for the first time to take this case that could change that. Maybe even get rid of Section 230. And that would fundamentally change the internet. But it could also change this one other thing, something that we've reported on, deepfakes. And that is what we are talking about today. I'm Dean Russell.
I'm Amory Sievertson.
And I'm Ben Brock Johnson, and you're listening to Endless Thread.
We're coming to you from WBUR, Boston's NPR station.
Today, producer Deepfake Dean brings us a story about the dark side of deepfakes and the law.
I never want that nickname ever.
Oh, it's back.
Sorry, Deepfake Dean.
We're entering an era in which our enemies can make it look like anyone is saying anything at any point in time, even if they would never say those things. For instance, they could have me say things like, President Trump is a total and complete dipshit.
So often when we talk about deepfakes, we talk about the fun videos, right? Like Jordan Peele with Obama's face, fake Tom Cruise on TikTok.
I love fake Tom Cruise. Big fan.
But those videos are not where deepfakes begin.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the great gifts of that Reddit hath given us.
Do tell.
So I think in 2017, a Redditor named Deepfakes started making fake celebrity porn with AI. So they took images of celebrities like Gal Gadot, a.k.a. Wonder Woman, and Scarlett Johansson, a.k.a. Ghost in the Shell Woman, and overlaid their faces onto the bodies of porn actresses.
Yeah. According to the research company Sensity AI, at least 90% of deepfake videos are porn because the internet.
At the end of 2017, I had heard a news report about deepfakes and their sudden appearance on Reddit. And I immediately thought, well, where is the law in this?
Rebecca Delfino is a law professor at Loyola. She spent years focused on how the legal system addresses deepfake porn. To her,
it clearly is an invasion. It's harmful. It's abusive. It inflicts emotional distress. It's harassment.
But as she would find out, in most places, deepfake porn is not illegal.
What?
So I learned this factoid while producing our deepfake episode in 2022. And I remember that, like, my brain basically broke because, like, there are so many laws out there about copyright, right? Like, you can't play this music with your YouTube video. You can't use a clip of The Day After Tomorrow on your podcast. You can't call something Choose Your Own Adventure without being sued by Choose Your Own Adventure. But if, you know, someone wants to take Scarlett Johansson's face and put it into an explicit video and then post it online, they can do that.
There is no federal criminal law or civil remedy. You know, the absence of the law is effectively an immunity.
I should say most countries don't have deepfake laws. The UK has proposed some. China, a notable exception, requires consent for a deepfake.
That's interesting. Like China, famous for propaganda.
Yeah, exactly. But there is no U.S. federal law. Hmm. And in one respect, it's not surprising that in 2017 that was the case, no U.S. federal law. But on the other hand, deepfake porn feels very clearly not okay.
Okay, so yes, obviously not okay. I'm trying to imagine the argument that a deepfake porn creator would make. I don't know what it would be, but my guess would be is that it's sort of like creative work.
Ugh.
I know.
I know.
I'm sorry.
Listen.
I'm sorry. I just need
I'm just trying to like imagine what is the other side of the argument. Clearly, some people think it's okay. Some people think it's not a big deal. Some people think
though,
it's like worth
doing. Do they think it's okay, or they do it because they're kind of a sick person and there's nothing stopping them and they just get kicks out of it. So they do it. Like, I don't think that I don't know. I would like to think that they know it's not okay and there might not be a law, but I here, Amory, am here to tell you it's not okay.
So when deepfakes first start, Rebecca is watching this turn into a plague for celebrities, like in particular celebrity women. Like I mentioned that 90% of deepfakes are porn. 90% of those deepfake porn videos are of women.
In a shocker to no one.
Yeah, I know. Vice journalist Samantha Cole put this particularly well in 2018 when she wrote, "Deepfakes were created as a way to own women's bodies."
Hmm.
I think that's why they do it. I think it's just to put women down and to take advantage of technology in a way that puts women down.
Right. And a lot of this is because, right, like we're talking about not having consent. Rebecca Delfino saw the future and had these bigger concerns.
Not for celebrities who have platforms to correct the record, if you will, but the implications for private individuals.
Right. Because when this all started out, you actually needed, just like in our last deepfakes episode, Dean, right? Like we had to have a lot of raw data to input into the machine learning algorithms in order for them to complete the deepfake.
Right.
So I can see that it makes sense that, you know, people would start with celebrities. I mean, none of it makes sense as we've been talking about, but it makes sense that people would start with celebrities.
Because there are a lot of images to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, now it's 2023 and not only is the tech more powerful and like more available, like you can just go and, you know, use a deepfake creator online. We have more photos of ourselves online, which means anybody can be targeted. Mm. And if you are just a regular non-celebrity who has been, you know, victimized in some way, like some other way, like violence or domestic abuse, often the only thing that you have is the law. As deeply flawed as it is, often it is the only thing you have. And so, you know, what happens when the law refuses to see you as a victim? What happens if one day you find out that you've been deepfaked? What do you do? More on that in a minute.
Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, imagine if you open your computer and there's a Pornhub page in your name with your address, with your surname, with your college, and videos of you in extremely explicit porn.
This is Sophie Compton, filmmaker, activist. She recently dug into the world of deepfake pornography for her documentary, Another Body. And she started with this question. How common is it for real people to get deepfaked?
in the research phase for that film, I just put a call out on my social media asking for anyone that had experienced intimate image abuse to get in touch, and was really shocked at the flood of messages just initially through my networks that came forward.
Sophie is part of an organization called My Image, My Choice, which, as the name implies, helps people who have experienced non-consensual misuse of their image. She's heard dozens of deepfake stories and says that for a lot of people, the first thing that happens when they see themselves in these videos is a kind of cognitive dissonance. Like, you don't know what it is that you're seeing. And then the second part hits you, the abuse.
When I paint that scenario to like women and young women, like we just know how violating that would feel, because we deal on a daily basis with the way that our image is used and misused and misrepresented, and the fear of being painted in a certain way. You know what the reputational costs of that might be. Like if you've been a girl growing up in a school, like you know that you do not want to be branded the slut or whatever. And you know that that can have a tangible impact on your life, your relationship with your body, your relationships with men, etc.
Oof, yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think is at the center of this is that sex can be such an empowering thing, and it can also be such a vulnerable thing. And so as much as I would hope that if something like this happened to me, I would be able to brush it off to some extent, I also think that that hope is absolutely no match for the intense vulnerability and frustration and like loss of faith in humanity that I would feel if something like this happened to me.
Right. I do think fundamentally this is sexual assault, right? Like because someone somewhere is making you do something that you have not consented to do.
Yeah. Anecdotally, I have read what, you know, what people say about this online. Like I've read a lot of comments, and I do often see, you know, to Sophie's point, I do often see men or like male presenting people who don't seem to grasp why this is a big deal. Like it's fake. Who cares? That's a recurring statement.
Oh, okay. So I wasn't far off necessarily on why some people are doing it. Right.
That's right, yeah. And I mean, many of them are probably like Andrew Tate trolls, but some genuinely, you know, I think to your point, Ben, may not really understand why there are or that there are real world consequences. Like there are social impacts, there are job impacts, there is a loss of trust because you don't know who did this. And oftentimes it's someone you know. Even there's a physical threat because people may think that you are actually soliciting sex.
The lack of control and agency that you have over your body is what that violation consists of. And the knowledge that people will be watching this, and some people will probably take it as a joke. Some people will probably like find it extremely erotic. People might be really into it, you know? And all of these things are completely out of your control.
There are publicized cases of this, like everyday people or not quite celebrity influencers being deepfaked. And I want to be careful about talking about them, because there is an inherent problem in discussing deepfake porn in that, you know, like I know someone listening is just going to Google, like they just are. And so by talking about it, you risk perpetuating the harm. I reached out to a lot of women who have had this experience, and no one was interested in reliving this or running a risk. And I don't blame them. But talking about it also raises awareness. And so I will use one example that has already gotten a lot of attention recently. Back in January, a popular Twitch streamer named Brandon Ewing, who uses the screen name Atrioc, he admitted to paying for deepfake porn that featured other Twitch personalities, peers, women. And this blew up, and the names of the women got out, and some responded in tweets. And so, Amory, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to read one of those.
I want to scream. Stop. Everybody fucking stop. Stop spreading it. Stop advertising it. Stop. Being seen naked against your will should not be a part of this job. Thank you to all the male internet journalists reporting on this issue. Fucking losers.
And then she tags some guy named Hunter who writes about gaming or something like that. But the fact that I am a male journalist reporting on this, you know, albeit sans names, that is not lost on me. After the uproar, Ewing released an apology video.
I'm sorry. I'm just fucking sorry. I don't support this stuff. I don't believe this stuff. I'm not like a fucking advocate in any way. I regret it. I would never do it.
And he retired from Twitch. But you can't really undo the harm. So one of the survivors, the term Sophie and others use for people who experienced this, one of the survivors she threatened to sue. She wanted legal retribution. Unfortunately, that never really went anywhere because attorneys refused to take up her case. Which brings us back to the law. There are a few ways of approaching this problem, legally speaking. None of them are really ideal or very easy because there are, you know, there's a lot of challenges, and I want to go through a couple of them. So, challenge number one. There's no federal criminal law against deepfakes. There is a law against cyberstalking that you could sort of bend to your, you know, to use, but prosecutors still have to prove that deepfake creators intended harm. And that's not really easy. Challenge number two, who is the victim? So, like, let's say you want to sue in civil court for damages, like, forget criminal charges. There are a few common law precedents that you could use, but they require that the plaintiff be an individual. And a deepfake, by its very nature, is two people. So legal experts say these precedents may not actually work.
Oh my God, what a weird challenge.
Meaning the person who's, I mean, if we're using an example of like a celebrity face and a porn star's body, those are the two people involved?
Exactly.
Which I think is actually, that's fascinating because I think it that is. Portends a lot of interesting challenges in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The third challenge, finding the perpetrator. And this is the biggie. Even if you can get past the problems that I mentioned, you still have to find the deepfake creator. And they could be anywhere. They could be in another country for all you know. They could be anyone for all you know.
We still don't know who deepfakes the user is.
Exactly. Right.
The person who started this whole mess. Oof.
The easiest thing would be if you could just forget the creator and go after the website. The website, after all, hosts the video. And so you should be able to sue them, right? Like, or at least be able to force them to take it down.
Section 230 actually gives them the ability to tell people no, and there's no recourse if they do that.
Again, Loyola Law School's Rebecca Delfino.
Say that 10 times.
Loyola Law School.
Loyola Law School.
Loyola Law School. Loyola Law School.
If someone reaches out to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and says, look, there is this deepfake pornographic video of me. I want you to take it down. Those ISP providers could tell the individual, we didn't make the video. We're not responsible for it. We can't help you.
So we're back to Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. The Supreme Court took up the case against Section 230 this year because it protects Google from being sued for the hosting of, you know, terrorist propaganda, right? Like the Gonzalez versus Google thing that we started with. It also prevents websites from being sued for hosting non-consensual deepfake porn, which means that Google, Reddit, Twitter, etc., you can ask them to take down a deepfake, but they don't actually have to. Like, Pornhub says that it doesn't allow deepfakes, but they are there. And then there are these websites that are predicated on deepfake porn. Like, that is their whole business model. And again, they are protected by Section 230. Rebecca says that the intent of the Communications Decency Act was different.
That was passed in 1996, and it was designed to promote the development of internet and social media networks.
In 1996, websites were pretty basic, right? Like, they weren't as much a part of everyone's life. Congress kind of thought of them as these, like, innocuous bulletin boards.
And the idea was that these bulletin boards should have immunity from lawsuits for the third-party content.
So Section 230 was designed for the little guy, right? Like the small business startup.
OG blogger, the GeoCities blogger. Yeah.
That's right. So, like, imagine if you could sue Reddit every time something illegal showed up on it. Like, it would never have gotten past week one.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I keep thinking about when it comes to this question of, like, what do we do with Section 230? You know, for better or for worse, often for worse, like, the way that all of this is developed is these tech companies basically figured out that users posting content on the internet for free could be aggregated and monetized. Mm-hmm. And Section 230 basically allows that fundamental, you know, evolution of the internet to exist. And so if we make Section 230 like not a protection of tech companies, it really would turn everything upside down in a pretty destructive and messy way.
Well, I wonder if there's a way to rein this in, kind of like the First Amendment, not to compare the actual content of the legislation, but the First Amendment is so broad, right? It's just like free speech. And then at some point along the line, we say, you know what? Hate speech, not protected. Mm-hmm. And you can't yell fire in a movie theater. Like, what is the version of that we can apply to Section 230 so that it still gives the internet the freedom that it needs to be the internet, but also says, you know what, that's crossing a line, and we're not going to stand for it, and we're not going to support you in not taking action against it.
Yeah, but if you ask Google, they would tell you that
they'd say
free speech. Yeah, they don't need those sort of those clarifications, right? Like, Google says that they take deepfakes seriously. They take them down. They employ people and AI to kind of find and snuff out illegal and harmful content.
Mm.
Rebecca Delfino says, she doesn't see it that way.
There's no consistency in the takedown requests. Every entity applies their own individual timeline based on their resources. Every entity has a different standard of proof that they require the victim to bring forward. And my concern is that the amount of power over something that is criminal, that has been given to a private actor to make these determinations, it's troubling.
So I will wrap with some good news and some bad news. And what's your vote? Where should we start?
Well, let's go bad first, baby.
Yeah, get that out of the way.
Yeah.
So for people like activist Sophie Compton, the bad news came last month. The Supreme Court threw out Gonzalez versus Google. The case was sent back to lower courts, and a similar case, Twitter versus Tomna, which also looked into big tech's responsibility for terrorist content, the court ruled 9-0 in Twitter's favor.
Mm. Wow.
So Section 230 is unchanged. You want to know the good news?
Of course I do, Dean.
Please. It's about time. We could all use
of the
some.
Deep, all of the deep fake porn creators have gone to therapy and are reconsidering their choices.
The real good news, the real good news is that there has been some change. Survivors and like activists concerned about non-consensual deepfake porn have formed groups like, you know, My Image, My Choice, which I mentioned, to help people who've experienced this harm and also to advocate for those protections. And while it is not a federal crime to make non-consensual deepfake porn, a few states have been looking into it. California and New York now have laws that allow residents to sue deepfake creators in civil court. And Virginia and Georgia make it a crime to create and share this content.
Wow. Hell yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense to me.
Even in states where criminal law hasn't quite caught up, some prosecutors are figuring it out by using revenge porn laws and things like that. Like in April, a 22-year-old Long Island man was sentenced to 6 months in jail and registered as a sex offender for deepfaking at least 11 women from his hometown.
Ugh. I will say, though, I really do stand by the throw him in therapy, not in jail thing. I just want to say that, even though it's like I am pleased to see states taking this seriously and, you know, holding people accountable. But yeah, I don't think throwing deep fakers in jail is going to fix the problem.
I mean, I'll add one more thing. Which is, you know, not long after that Long Island case, a U.S. congressman from New York introduced a bill that would actually make sharing deepfakes a federal crime. It would give survivors a way to seek relief, and it would maintain their anonymity in those cases. So, you know, even without a change to Section 230, there could be some protections. Again, Sophie Compton.
It feels like we're close, but we need, you know, that one more push from the public to demand this change, honestly.
I'm glad to hear these state laws are happening because, as I said before, I do think this can fundamentally be looked at as sexual assault. And the other thing I'm thinking about is that even, you know, these state laws are, I think, going to face challenges, right? Because as we said before, we still don't know who the original deepfakes user is. So, you know, it's going to be a chicken and egg problem, I think, in some ways. When we make it a federal crime, we kickstart a process of needing to identify users. And at the same time, that sort of anonymity that people can achieve online is another kind of fundamental underpinning of the internet as we know it.
I'm trying to gather my thoughts. Sometimes my first reaction is just like, burn it all down.
Unplug it.
Unplug it.
somebody unplug it.
Cut the cord.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have made the internet so big and so vast, and I think the same human power, brain power that made the internet the way it is can also find a way to fix the problems that we have created. And we need to take responsibility and figure out a way to do that. Endless Thread is a production of WBUR in Boston.
This episode was produced by Dean Russell, and it is hosted by me, Ben Brock Johnson.
And me, Amory Sievertson, and Deepfake Dean, of course, henceforth only to be known as Dean Russell. Mix and sound design by Emily Jankowski. The rest of the team is Sumita Joshi, Quincy Walters, Grace Tatter, Nora Sachs, Matt Reed, and Paul Vikas.
If something like this has happened to you or someone you know, you should know there are organizations that can help, including the Cyber Civil Rights Initiative, My Image, My Choice, and the UK Revenge Porn Helpline.
Did we fix all the problems? Did cool. we do it?
They're done.
Perfect.
World fixed.
I also would like, I just want to advocate for consensual deepfakes. I just feel like I'd be thrilled if someone made a very silly deepfake of me.
If you want to put my head
I shouldn't
on,
say
on
this
someone,
in the podcast.
On someone winning a mini golf tournament or something.
That's what I'm saying. Like, put my head on the end of a Twinkie that dances. You know? I want a donut of my face. Is that too much to ask?